Welcome to the Quintessential Podcast, and thanks to our new title sponsor, Spire Academy Lacrosse. Spire is an international high school and post-grad sports performance training and education boarding school located within a world-class event and wellness complex.
Quintessential Podcast welcomes in Jake Taylor live from South Bend, Indiana. I tell you, it was quite a weekend for me last weekend. Friday night, I got to cover Navy upsetting Hopkins. Saturday, I turned it right around for Michigan at Notre Dame. And after a 3-3 deadlock early, man, Notre Dame really took it to the Wolverines. Fighting Irish dressed in green. Jake Taylor, our guest, had a monster second half. Jake, what was the after effects, so to speak, on the night before St. Paddy's Day off a big win in South Bend? I got to imagine it was pretty lively.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, we're coming off of spring break, so not the majority of the student population wasn't out here, but being able to spend some time with the team on one of our last off days before we get back in the routine of school was really nice. Got to celebrate St. Patrick's Day to some extent and just spend some time with each other. That's always a great thing. We got a lot of time together this week, so capping it off after a win was obviously great and super enjoyable as always.
You mentioned spring break. There was a great crowd again. You guys have played in front of three packed houses. That first game, that the Georgetown game was a you know, kind of a welcome back to campus. I thought the Maryland game, you had the football team there. This game, it looked like there was a lot of Smurfs, green covered little kids on the far half of the field. What's it been like this year after winning a national title to get all this notoriety in Indiana now?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, we've definitely always had a good following, and we've been fortunate enough to have great weather for all of our games this year. So I think that definitely helps. Having April, May style weather in February and March definitely allows for more people to have a little bit of willingness to come to our games. And yeah, there was definitely a lot of little kids at this one. We had a few teams out from California, Colorado, and Illinois coming to play some scrimmages, which they did on Sunday yesterday. So that attributed to about 120 of the fans out there, a bunch of the little guys. So that was awesome getting to see a bunch of them after. And a few of us helped coach their scrimmages after the game.
Really?
Yeah.
So you got to interact with the guys?
Yeah, so I coached it was the Kings Lacrosse Club. They were out for it, so I helped coach the next morning with some of their head coaches. The 2028 team, I believe, was the team out here, and then Mad Dog as well as True Illinois came out, and so there was just a few scrimmages the next day.
Cool. What do you emphasize when young attackmen or young goal scorers come to you and ask you for advice? What do you find yourself emphasizing?
So I'm not the typical attackman. I'm not much of a dodger, not necessarily the quickest, but I try to feed different things that I see in players around me, things that Pat and Chris do well, things that different coaches have told me throughout my career before I kind of solidified a more niche role. But just emphasizing keeping your head up in all costs, constantly be moving. A lot of the off-ball things I've learned from my box career, and just consistently moving, communicating well, and just being willing to talk to guys on your team and let them know what you saw and maybe ask them what they saw. That's something stressed very heavily on our team. Communication is very, very big and very highly valued. So it's just something I like to harp on. Whereas I know in my experience growing up, I wasn't necessarily talking as much and initiating as much. So it's something that I've grown to appreciate and learn a lot about even in my 5 years here.
And The Culture Code, which is a great leadership book. It's a study about teams and why some teams are effective and others aren't. They talk about teams that have an exorbitant amount of communication do better, regardless of what their field of study is. And like for you, that means going back to a huddle and talking to the Kavanaughs. Hey, I saw this. Their guy's leaving me early when you drive up right-handed, or he's sticking to me when you drive up left-handed. Like, there's got to be constant stuff, whether it's useful or not. It all should help. And then I guess you learn how to filter what's important, what's not. But so that's what you're talking about when you're talking about communication?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at the end of every play, whether we score or not, you can usually see a few guys either on the bench or on the field together. We're celebrating the goal for a second, but then it's talking about, all right, yeah, like, let's look for this. This is what I saw. And just, it's a little quick hitter of what we saw and what we can do better next time. Hey, tell our coaches this, tell the next midline this, whoever's going up next. Is just, it's constant. It's nonstop. It's off ball. It's on ball. It's on the field. It's between dead ball plays. It's everything. So it's just, it's constant with our offense. And that's something that I think definitely helps out in stands out in our wins versus in our tighter games.
Jake wears 13. Last week they wore the green uniforms. He hails from Denver, Colorado. Big brain and insane hand-eye coordination and stick skills. Where did that come from? Did that come from playing in the backyard when you were 5 and 6? Did that come from your high school experience? What do you attribute your skill set to?
I think the greatest sole thing that has contributed to my game and my style of play is playing box across. I grew up playing box, started playing for Denver Elite and at DU for some of the summer leagues or different clinics they held when I was 8 and 9 years old. And I had been playing ever since, up until about 2 years ago when I started getting facing a few injuries. But box across is easily the sole most important thing that has benefited my game, given me the ability to play in tight and be comfortable with pressure and deal with a lot of the situations I face as a crease attackman and as a predominantly off-ball player. And then my dad always would throw around with me in the backyard growing up. It was whenever I wasn't practicing or playing, because I tried to be on any team I could and play in any tournament I could. I loved playing growing up. But whenever I wasn't, he was always with me throwing around, shooting, and just working on just little things like quick sticks and trying to get every specific type of pass and shot off whenever I could.
I've seen you in warmups. I've watched you. There's at times you can use your stick almost like it's a tennis racket, quite honestly. Like, you'll redirect. You won't even catch. What kind of pocket do you use?
I just have a pretty standard, not the deepest pocket. I don't have a ton of hold in my stick, a ton of whip. I play with very little whip and just enough hold that I can control it with my hands and my wrists. But I value, for my specific skill sets, I value being able to get the ball out of my stick as quick as possible, because I don't necessarily have the fastest shot and my stick's not strong to increase my speed and my shot very much. It's just kind of designed to get a quicker release out of there so I can make a play quickly with it while having the ball for only a second or so.
Was this your role in high school as well?
Yeah, for the most part. Every now and then I dodged a little bit, maybe with shorty matchups or more favorable matchups, but for the majority of high school and into college, I was more of a off-ball player, set a lot of picks, move off-ball, do a lot of cutting, and I kind of have better dodgers and better initiators that I worked with them well, and they did their job by getting me the ball, and I did my role.
You mentioned your dad. For me, it was my older brothers shooting on me. They were 6 and 8 years older than me, and we had a decent-sized backyard, enough where that we could use the back of the garage as a goal, and so they'd bring their friends over and help me. That was the only way they wouldn't let me play, you know, in the field. It was getting the goal. I replaced a trash can. Now, you mentioned playing with your dad. To me, the coolest thing is the conversations that happen when you're playing with a sibling or a parent. What influence did he have on your development, you think, that way?
I think just being out there with me and having somebody to play catch with and throw around with. We had a nice brick wall, so if I wanted to play wall ball, I could. But whenever I wanted to or expressed interest in playing catch, taking some shots or doing anything, he was always willing to step in and step outside and help me out, whether it was 20, 30 degrees out and we had to bundle up, or there was a nice summer day. But he was always willing and always wanted to come out and help me work on my catching and throwing.
Are you a wall ball guy, or have you moved past that?
I definitely still am. I like throwing around. I don't necessarily sit on the wall for long periods of time, but I'm big on just having my stick in my hands, walking around the locker room. We have a few walls in and outside that are nice. So walk out, throw maybe 5-10 passes, go back inside. And before games, I definitely don't like to sit still, because I don't like gathering myself. I just like keeping moving, and I struggle to sit still, and I get pretty excited with a little bit of the reasonable nerve. So walking around, being able to throw a few passes, and I find somebody who wants to play catch for a bit, play catch with them, and then I'll go back inside and kind of just bounce around and just kind of keep my stick moving and my hands warm.
I'm very jealous of you guys nowadays with your uniform. The you know, these big time Power Five programs have crazy amounts of uniform and gear, shoes. Like, we got one pair a year, and you know, I used the turf shoes, my freshman turf shoes, like all through the 4 years. What was it like for you guys to see those green jerseys this week in the locker room?
Yeah, it was really exciting. I hadn't seen him yet. I didn't know if they were going to be like this year's Shamrock edition of the football uniforms with the white lettering or the traditional with the blue. And when we saw him in the locker room, it was pretty exciting. It was pretty invigorating, and everybody loved him. Everybody thought they were really cool. And that was the first time we've really worn a green uniform. We've had the white with green alternates from past years, but this is the first time in my career we've worn the green. So it was pretty exciting being able to rep them for the first time in a while, or if not ever, right before St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I'm not a huge uniform guy, but let me tell you, when you have that alternate uniform once a year, maybe twice, it's special. And if you when they do it right too, and clearly you guys did it right. The only guy in the stadium not wearing green was Coach Corrigan. What the heck was up with that?
He emphasizes every now and then that he's not there to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, and that he's there because it's just another game for him, right? I mean, that's a good mentality to have. And at the end of the day, it is just a uniform. It's really exciting. It's cool for the media, cool for the fans. It's cool for us because we enjoy those things. And it's kind of it's a confidence builder when you look good. So it's definitely something cool. But yeah, he emphasized to us that he's not there to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. He's just there to play Michigan.
What's the vibe of the team right now?
Spirits are high. Definitely honing in on the bye week. We don't have a game for 2 weeks. So this is a big time for people to get what they need in terms of therapy, different needs. Some guys need to maybe get some work in who haven't been playing as much. Some guys need to get some rest in. Some guys need to nurse a few tweaks and being a little banged up. And that's just kind of anything you could expect in the middle of the year. But going into a bye week, we're definitely going to be focusing on what's next with Syracuse coming up in 2 weeks. So that's what our eyes are on next.
You've got a track record of some injuries, some serious injuries. How do you manage your workload now?
I personally don't think changing my workload has benefited me in the past. I think going with an inconsistent pattern has never really helped me. I think being able to, on our lighter practice days, still get out there, suit up, stretch out like normal, and do a few drills at just a lighter rate have been good to get the blood flowing, get the joints lubricated, and get ready to go has definitely benefited me in the middle parts of the week where we're playing a little bit more live.
There's been occasional twisters and behind-the-back shots. Now it's a weekly occurrence. And not only is it a weekly occurrence, guys are getting really good at it. You, for one, what I love about your game is you pick the right spots. Like, you're not looking to be creative. You let it come to you. But that creative process, like, how do you decide in the heat of battle and you got 1/10 of 1 second to say, this is a time I need to twist, this is a time I need to do a wraparound, this is, like, where does that, is that just unconscious at this stage that comes from horsing around with the Cavanaughs before practice or with your dad in the backyard? Like, take me through that. How would you explain that maybe to like a 16-year-old?
Yeah, in most cases, it's pretty unconscious. I don't really have time to think about where I'm going to shoot the ball or where I'm going to place it. Having the fortune to be playing at this level, it's kind of expected that if you can look at a goal and pick a spot and shoot it all within a split second with the blink of an eye. And that's emphasized in any locker room. So, I mean, being able to just catch and shoot, get a quick release off, and then do it with good placement as well as good speed is definitely a trait I've gained over time just as I get older and as I've played a lot. So I would say that for the most part, it's pretty, I'm not necessarily thinking about where I'm shooting for everything. It's a lot of the time it's how can I get the ball out as quick as possible so the goalie doesn't even have time to read where my shot's coming from.
Yeah, when Gary Gate dunked in 1988 from behind the goal, everyone was like, wow, they had never seen that before. But apparently he had done it in practice numerous times. So I'm thinking for you, like, practice is where you're experimenting. Practice is where you're maybe taking the shot and saying, oh, that's not the time for that. Or, wow, that worked. Or, you know, next time if I do it this way, it could go. So, like, there's guys I know who go through practice like brainless. It sounds like you're really aware of your opportunities, your touches, your angles, the defensive pressure, those subtleties. Is that always on your mind as a crease guy?
To some extent, yeah. I mean, it definitely helps being able to have a very deep roster, and the scout guys work tirelessly to make sure they're giving us the best look for every team we see. And I think I can confidently say we have one of the best goalie rooms in the country. Our starting goalies, our backups, our scout guys, everything, they all work nonstop to make sure they give us the best look and scout the goalies we're coming up with next. So seeing them step out and replicate different footwork patterns and different arc levels that the goalies we see have, that definitely helps out a lot. Not to mention they're already very skilled. So it's harder to score on our guys in practice, it feels, than in some games. And that's attributed to the skills that we have on that front. And then defensively, they work really hard in giving us the best look. We watch a lot of film. They watch even more film. And it really helps out being able to see a defense that very closely replicates the teams we're going to be playing as we approach game day.
So when you watch film as an inside player, you're looking at your potential matchup. And then are you looking at slide mentality in certain scenarios?
Yeah, the biggest thing I look at is how they're sliding, where they're sliding, and how early or late. Because if they're sliding earlier, I need to be ready quicker. And if they're sliding later, I need to find different spaces as they pull in from the back, or read how different defensive packages help in on the backside or the lack thereof.
So you're looking at two slides also. You're making a kind of a checklist on the guy covering you. This guy doesn't want to leave me this week. Like, it's going to be tough for me to get over. Or you go into other weeks saying, this guy slides to everything. I'm going to be open here. My focus is now on the two slide. Is that accurate?
Yeah, to some extent, for sure. I mean, at the end of the day, when we get to game day, a lot of it is reading and using that first few minutes, that first couple of possessions, to see if anything I looked at and anything I noticed, as well as what the coaches noticed, is true. Because some games you go in and there's a completely different slide package than you prepared for, a completely different scheme that the defense is playing. So adjusting and adapting is a little bit bigger than that, but definitely having a little bit of preparation and looking into it a bit has been huge and has been really good for me and for us.
How much do you listen to the defensive communication?
In games, a decent amount. With teams, it's not necessarily, it's more team by team. Some teams, if you know that they're going to be playing in a way that they switch slide roles often, or they're in and out of different sets, whether it's AJ versus crease versus zone, you'll kind of notice those things a little bit more. And then other teams, it's kind of if your guy is calling himself on, how can you make that difficult? If my guy is calling himself on in the slide role, how can I put him in a position that makes it hard for him to slide to, say, Dobson or Faison coming down the middle? Or how can I go set a pickoff ball to make it so now another guy may think he's in the slide role and potentially create confusion in the defense?
So if your guy's not talking, that probably means he's pretty locked on to you, I would think. If you hear him saying, I'm hot, or I'm too, like, you'll hear certain terms. You're going to get a feel for what their terminology is pretty early in the game, right?
Yeah, definitely. And most teams have their own words, their own terms, but like if you say I'm hot and I'm on and any sort of identifying role, a stick in the air, that's typically indicating a slide. So it gets to be pretty easy when you just hear like the way in which they're echoing something to their defense. And that's something that's nice to read and nice to pick apart.
What's it like playing with Pat Cavanaugh, 51, the older of the Cavanaughs?
I mean, he's a phenomenal feeder. He's great off the dodge. He's great off the rip. He's great on everything. He always keeps his head up. He's always looking for me. And it's nice having built as much chemistry as we have over the past 3 years, and even just being at school together for the past five.
When you guys go live in practice, 1v1s, let's say, are they hunting the way they do in the ride that I see on Saturdays?
Yeah.
Wow.
They work as hard in practice as they do in any game. And our guys, like, their mentality of practicing how you play is definitely mentioned in any week. And a bad week of practice indicates potential for lower performance in games. So it's definitely something that we try to harp on, about staying on top of ourselves in practice and making sure we're preparing ourselves to the best of our abilities. And that goes 1 through 60. All of our guys tend to have that mentality. And every now and then there's a rough day. I mean, every team's going to have a few tough days of practice, or individual players will have an off day, but trying to mitigate those and minimize them is something that is definitely emphasized for us.
I thought that was one of my primary takeaways from Saturday's win against Michigan, was just the compete level And it noticeably ratcheted up from the loss to Georgetown last time I was in South Bend. But again, when it starts with Pat and Chris, everybody like follows. And you guys played nasty and you played like playoff hockey, like the whole game. Like it was pretty cool.
Today's episode is brought to you in partnership with Spire Lacrosse. Spire's world-class high school and post-grad lacrosse programs are ideal for serious lacrosse players looking for an intense training environment to prepare for the next level of competition. The academies provide student athletes the chance to study, train, and compete in world-class athletic and academic facilities while seeking the best possible college scholarship opportunities.
You a hockey fan? You seem to like that reference.
Yeah, I like hockey. I'm not I'm an Avs fan, but I don't watch a ton of hockey, but I do enjoy it when I do watch. That's just fun. I know it's exciting and it's high stakes, and I mean that's how every game feels. If you treat every game with high stakes, everything feels a little bit more exciting in every given moment.
What was the fall like when you're going to football games and you're seeing this cat, this freshman wide receiver, Jordan Faison, all of a sudden get some snaps, make some catches, and all of a sudden become the go-to guy? Like, I'm sure you met him a number of times, but he was pretty probably engrossed with the football team. Like, what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy. He initially, he was a little bit quieter at first. We didn't know him as well. He was always in the football locker room. He was focused with that because that was a priority at the time. And we were just, as his future teammates, just excited to see him thriving and him doing well there. It's really cool seeing the collaboration between our sports and theirs and his ability to take what he learned from the lacrosse field applied to football and vice versa. And he's been phenomenal for us this year, and just seeing him there was super exciting. I remember his first touchdown against Louisville. We were all in the hotel. We were in a hotel watching it, and everybody was going nuts in the lobby. We were all together and just celebrating his successes on the football team all as one. And now his successes in lacrosse, he's fitting in perfectly, and he fits in just like any other day, as if he was with us all fall.
I see him getting better every time. Every time I turn him on, he's getting better. That right to left split the other day, and then he put the ball offside hip, and Cotter couldn't even see if it went in or not. I'm like, no, that went in. And my thought, watching him week one, or what, the Georgetown game, like, he would have hit Anderson Moore right in the chest, but Moore moved out of the way. And I'm like, oh, that was an ugly shot. He got lucky. And now all of a sudden he can't miss. Like, are you seeing the same improvement in practice, or is he just getting lucky on Saturdays?
I mean, I think with the way we prepare, everybody's improving throughout the year. That's kind of the goal, is to start somewhere, start as high as you can at the beginning of the year and only keep climbing. Kind of have the mentality that you're at the bottom of the mountain at the beginning of the year and want to reach the top by the end. But the more you can improve throughout the year, the higher your ceiling gets, and the greater the ability you have to be the best of your abilities. And that's something that we've emphasized. And I think he's definitely exemplifying the idea that he wants to keep getting better and wants to keep working. And he is. He's only getting better and better.
How would you describe, this is an older team. It was an older team last year too, but you're old again. How does that differ? Or what do you notice maybe from when you were starting off at Notre Dame?
Yeah, I mean, the senior leadership carries through. We have about 20 to 22 guys who are in senior or grad student roles, as well as another 10 juniors. We definitely have a deep team. We definitely have an old team, and we have a lot of guys who have seen a lot of different looks, seen a lot of different things, have been working in scout roles for part of their career, have working in scout roles for their full careers, and guys who've been playing for their full career. So every guy has a lot of experience aside from our few freshmen that we have. And just, there's a lot of buy-in. There's a lot of a really good mentality around the locker room that we want to give the starters the best look they have at the scout guys. And we want to read the scout guys and like appreciate what they're doing for us, because we don't get to do what we do without them.
Did you graduate already?
Yeah, I graduated last spring, and then I'm.
You did, yeah, because I got written as your graduate. And now, are you in the business school, or are you taking another line of study?
I'm in the business school, yeah. So I did my undergraduate in management, and then I'm getting a master's in business analytics right now.
Is that harder or easier right now during the season, and in terms of workload?
So the fall definitely had a harder workload for my specific program. It's a 1-year master, and the bulk of the work is done in the fall with a little bit in the summer before. So this semester has been a little bit lighter in the workload, and with the ramp up in the cross, it's definitely nice. It's easier to balance. It's been very manageable and very, very fair in terms of the increase in intensity of my schedule.
You got a shot to play indoor and outdoor, both or one or the other, depending on, you know, the fit, I guess. But when lacrosse is done, do you see yourself living in Colorado somewhere? Anytime I do a game in Vail, if I can stretch it, or do a game in Denver, I'm stretching it to go out to Vail for 3, 4, 5 a week. I've got that streak going since I was in college. Do you see yourself back in that part of the country?
I definitely have some eyes leading me back there, but I still have another year here. And for now, I just want to enjoy what I can and not look past what I have here and what I have right now and what I have coming up. I mean, I'm excited to be here. I love that I've had the opportunity to be in a fifth year, despite having the injuries, the blessing and a curse, having the opportunity to be here for a longer time. And I don't want to wish that time away, but I definitely am not opposed to moving home. I still haven't fully explored the opportunities. I'm not necessarily dead set on anywhere, but a lot of opportunity has its potential to kind of guide me to where I end up. And so I'm kind of just taking my time looking into that and assessing.
So yeah, with a 2-year program, I get the feeling that this year you can focus, this spring at least, you focus on lacrosse. This will be your last year of eligibility, correct?
This following year, 2025.
Oh, you get to play in 2025 again?
So I have a sixth year because of my ACL.
You do? Oh, wow. Wow. That's crazy. Wow. You got a shot to set some goal scoring records there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that's the goal, but at the end of the day, I just got to show up and enjoy it day by day.
Hey, last thing, Ross Bergmaster, bagpiper, improved dramatically. Love him. Love him. Love his energy on the lacrosse field. He and Will Donovan to me are just so fun to watch. Who's the next bagpiper though? Cotter brought that up to me. We didn't have an answer. Like who is being groomed right now to be the guy next year?
There's nobody in line currently. So historically the bagpiper of the current year will at the end of the season leave the bagpipes in one of the younger guys' lockers, and they have that summer and that fall to learn.
Wow.
That's all we know. We don't know who he's thinking
of. That's a big step down. You got to be grooming somebody now, don't you?
I mean, maybe, but I don't know if he does that in private, but to my knowledge, it's always been the pipes are left in your locker and now it's your job to learn. And that's a really cool tradition that they've been building for.
Oh, it's one of my favorite. And when I think about Brian Tevlin coming in for that 1 year from Yale, who happens to play the bagpipes. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah,
they never sounded better last year, but Ross is really doing a great job. So give Ross my best.
Will do.
Jake, appreciate the time. Enjoy your week off. I would have got myself into trouble. I got myself into trouble without weeks off. So time off was never my friend, but so I wish you well in staying out of trouble, but probably go bowling every night or something.
Exactly. Something like that.
Thanks, Jake. I'll see you down the road in April. I got a lot of ACC games, so continued success.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Be well.
Thank you for tuning into today's show. You can contact me at quint.kesnick@espn.com with any feedback or guest ideas. And a special thank you to all our sponsors, including today's presenting sponsor, Spire Lacrosse.